baryon problem? Well, basically, from a number of very good early experiments and measurements, we have a reasonable idea, we think, of what the universe is made up of. So 69% of it is made up of something really mysterious called dark energy, and that we really don't understand. The next sort of 27% is what we call dark matter, and that we pretty much don't understand. But dark matter is kind of interesting. We think it's some kind of exotic particle at the moment. And we see its influence through the way it interacts with gravity. So it seems to weigh a lot, and by weighing a lot, it spins galaxies around very quickly, among other things. The last 4% is what we think are these baryons, as you say. Baryons are just normal matter. You know, you and me are made up of baryons, protons and neutrons and things like that. And baryons, we think, comprise roughly 4% of the universe. But the problem is that we really can't, even that 4%, which is a really tiny fraction, it's everything that we see in the universe, but yet we still can't actually make up that 4%. You know, we think we can find, you know, less than 1% of that, of all that matter. So the question is, where is all the stuff? You know, we can't even find all the baryons.
And so you talked about there about the dark matter there with the gravitational warping of space due to its presence. So this kind of investigation, does this not work for finding this missing matter?
Well, not so much for dark matter. So we think that dark matter is quite an exotic thing. What's interesting about dark matter is that it doesn't seem to interact with light. So when people measure, you know, the behavior of the universe as a whole, it seems that dark matter and the photons or light just don't seem to interact. They don't know about each other. But normal matter, as we know, you know, normal matter can reflect light and it can refract things and it can diffract and it does all sorts of, you know, has a very strong relationship with light. You know, light and matter really interact really strongly. And we think that this stuff, the stuff that we found, we didn't actually find the really heavy part of it. But if we can, you know, deduce that there's heavy stuff there, we think that those are probably baryons.
Right, and so you talked about these blobs and radio waves from quasars shining through the blobs. Can you explain a little bit about the properties of these blobs?
Yeah, so the way we detected them is, as you say, so we were looking at a quasar that was a background, just something in the background, and it emits radio waves. And we use a radio telescope and we look at that quasar. And as you say, as the blob passes in front of that quasar, it acts like a lens and it, you know, focuses that quasar and defocuses the light or the radio waves, and so we see it getting brighter and fainter over the over a period of a few months.
And so, how long have we suspected, like in terms of, you know, missing matter in the universe has been something that's been talked about for a while now. How long have we suspected about this last 5% of normal matter?
Oh, the missing baryon problem is, I don't know how long, I couldn't tell you the actual history of it, I'm afraid. It's a little bit, I'm much more of an observer in these, the missing matter problem has only come up more recently as part of this, you know, of our investigation. So it's not so much it's in my field, I'm afraid. But yeah, it's a long-standing problem anyway.
And so you've talked about a few different techniques. How adequate are the tools we have now for probing the structure of the universe?
Well, pretty good. So the structures were first discovered in 1987, and at that time they only had a telescope with two channels, and you can think of a channel just like a radio, you know, like the radio in your car. You know, the telescope is just like a radio in the car. You know, you can only tune to one or two, you know, one channel at a time. The telescope that they first detected these on, they could tune to two channels at a time, and that was considered a pretty good thing. But these days, we've got, you know, the data that we presented in our paper the other day, we were able to get 9,000 channels. So it's basically like, you know, going from black and white pictures to color pictures. So that's a great tool. But even then, I still, you know, with the current telescope which we're using, which is the Compact Array up in Narrabri, Northwest New South Wales, I have to point that telescope at 1,000 galaxies every month. And that takes time. You know, each time the telescope has to move on to the next target and settle down and then look at that target. So we're hoping that a new telescope that we're building out in West Australia called ASCAP will make that a lot easier. So the ASCAP is really nice because it can see a huge swath of the sky at any time. So we just have to point that at, you know, a few dozen locations around the sky, and then we can find perhaps a few more of these things really easily. So that's what we're hoping that'll happen in the next 12 to 18 months.
So a little bit on that point is that you talked about having to point it at, you know, these lots of parts of the sky. Like astronomy, you're searching for a very small effect in a very big universe. How how much margin of error is this on your readings?
Well, that's a very good question. What was amazing and what surprised us really surprised us early on when we discovered this thing was actually it was a really booming signal. You know, it was a very strong signal. And that was a surprise. So, you know, we were looking at galaxies that are fairly bright, but the effect when it started was really, really noticeable. And that's a good thing. So, you know, that means that we can find them fairly easily. And now that we've detected one and we've got this exquisite data, we actually know what we're looking for. So, you know, when future data comes in, we can, you know, really start to look more sensitively at this stuff. But what's incredible about the radio is that it really shows these structures up really very well. Whereas if we look, we actually, at the same time as our event was happening, we actually looked in the optical and we didn't see anything at all. So, you know, if you looked at an optical telescope, it's completely transparent and there's no evidence for this thing actually passing by. Whereas if you look in the radio, it's booming in. So it's a very interesting, it's a very sensitive probe in the radio.
So as you said, and you mentioned in your article, that it's a bit of a holy grail of the field right now. Will we have to wait for the new telescope in order to be, you know, a little bit more sure about whether what we're seeing is that missing matter?
Well, yeah, so the Holy Grail, when I mentioned the Holy Grail in that article, it was more about the research to find the shape. So with these lenses, we don't actually know exactly what shape they are, and the shape will tell us what it actually is. So at the moment, we can, you know, we managed to rule out some certain types of shapes, but some shapes like a sheet, you know, a sheet that we're looking at edge on, I'm holding my palm out in front of me, pointing away from me. And, you know, if you can imagine a sheet that way, that's, you know, very thin as you look at it, but actually, is, you know, it looks like a sheet of paper, that sheet is, you know, model is still possible. The other possibility is like a hazelnut, like a hazelnut model shape, you know, hazelnut, like you can imagine that as a spherical shell with that has a hole in the middle, or, you know, that's essentially
it's hollow inside.
Yeah, hollow inside. Exactly. Thank you. And so, and if it's that shape, then that would lead us towards the dark, not the dark matter, but the missing matter problem, you know, the missing baryon problem. So the sheet model isn't so interesting for the missing matter problem, but the hollow shell model is much more of a kind of interesting option if it turns out to have that shape. But we don't know that yet. So the trick to finding out what the shape is if we can find another one, and then we point a bunch of other telescopes, and I mentioned that in the article, that what's called very long baseline interferometry. And if we're lucky and it's a close enough lens and it's a big enough lens, we should be able to find, measure the shape.